Suratul Fatiha. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Alhamdulillah, these 10 nights of Muharram are a treasure and a wealth. In fact, the greatest wealth we have in this dunya that we should take advantage of and we should utilize. And the emphasis on gaining knowledge and ilm cannot be underestimated. The fact that these majalis that we have, that these programs that we have, the essence of the programs is to gain the knowledge and the ma'rifat of Ahlul Bayt. Our goal is to reach Ahlul Bayt, and it's their job to make us reach Allah. This is how it has worked. And we have to really decide in the environment that we have made, or we see these majalis and these speeches and these programs of Imam Hussein have been conducted. We need to decide what we want. What do we want out of this? What is it that we are looking for? Do we want to feel good, or do we want to be good? It's two different things. There are people who want to feel good. You know, you feel good, alhamdulillah, you go on with it, you know. But it doesn't help you become good. It doesn't help you become good. Feeling good doesn't make you be good. I can make you feel good in a few minutes. I can make you feel good. We can say some hadiths, we can say many things that we have that will make a person really feel good. That, you know, he really feels good. Say loud salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had said that Yawm al-Hashr, the day of judgment, is as Yawm tubla sarair. That is a day that all our secrets are going to be revealed. Everything will be revealed on that day of judgment. Everyone will be exposed on the day of judgment. And so we see the Prophet has made a dua to Allah that on the day of judgment, Ya Allah, on the day of judgment, when you expose all the people, when you reveal the secrets of all the people, and when you bring out what's hidden inside of them, do not expose my ummah in front of other people. My ummah and my followers, Ya Allah, I ask you this, that do not expose them in front of others. And you know what? Allah replied to him and said, my beloved Prophet, I love my servants more than you. I will take account of them. I will do their judgment in such a place that no one will know what they have done, and their respect and honor will be preserved. Not even you will know what happened to them. You see, I mean, hadith like this really warms our heart, right? It warms our heart. You see, these sort of things make us feel good. They don't make us be good. Being good is different than feeling good. This is what we have to decide. What do we want from the Majlis of Imam Hussein? Do you want to feel good or do you want to be good? This is what has to be decided. You know, heating the oven won't make anything. You know, if you start the oven, it heats up. So heating the oven, do you want to heat the oven or you want to actually bake something? Right? Do you want to bake something or you just want to heat it up and say that, yes, you know, let's get it going? Fact is that, you know, this is what needs to be decided. Because many times a lot of people think that by feeling good that they have become good. It doesn't work that way. And this is what we want to learn as we are learning in regards to Karbala and in regards to Imam Hussein and his mission and why he made this stance. Imam Hussein explains himself and says that innama kharajtu li talab al-islah fi ummati jaddi. I am standing up, I am going out, rising up in order to do reform and to reform and to create reform in the nation of my grandfather. وَأُرِيدُ أَنْ أَمُرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَأَنْهَى عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. And I want to do amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar. وَأَسِيرُ بِسِيرَةِ جَدِّي وَأَبِي عَلِي ابْنِ أَبِي طَالِبٍ. That I want to practice the seerat, the way of life of my grandfather and my father. This is what I want to do. By saying this, obviously we as Shias understand and we know that Imam Hussein would obviously do what his grandfather did. Imam Hussein would obviously do what his father did. This is what Imam Hussein would do. Yes, he is an Imam, he is masoom, and he would only do what his grandfather and his father have done. He will walk on the same path. But the people at that time, and many Muslims today, do not know that. They think that, you know, Imam Hussein is different than his grandfather, or Imam Ali, or Imam Hassan. That they're different in their opinions and their ways, and, you know, for example, Imam Hassan might do one thing, Imam Hussein might do another thing. Even some of the Shias you see have this baseless conclusion that they made, that, you know what, Imam Hassan is different than Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein was very revolutionary and Imam Hassan was the peaceful type. It's because they haven't understood Imamah. They are unaware. That's why they say this. Otherwise, if Imam Hassan was in the place of Imam Hussein, he would have done the same thing. If Imam Hussein was in the place of Imam Hassan, he would have done the same thing. And he did. After Imam Hassan became shaheed, Imam Hussein, he carried out. And he went along with the sulh and the treaty of Imam Hassan.
until Mahavir died. He went along with it. He said, this is the right thing to do. He went with it. That shows that he will do the same thing that Imam Hassan did. The difference is not in the Imams. The difference is in the circumstances they live in. That's where the differences come in. But all the Imams are one. This is what we see that is clear at this time. But this message was clear for the people at that time. But this statement when Imam Hussein is making it, Asiru bisirati jaddi wa abi, what does it mean for us? What does it mean for us right now in this age that we are living in? What meaning does it have for us? Here, my friends, what does Imam Hussein want to tell us? Okay, yeah, the Seerat of the Prophet. What is in the Seerat of the Prophet is Imam Hussein trying to relate to? Because when we look at the Seerat of the Prophet, there are many things. What in the Seerat is he trying to say that, listen, I'm emphasizing this in my mission. And this mission is so important that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you know, and the prophets of Islam throughout history have worked in order to establish this mission, to fulfill this mission. And I am fulfilling the dreams and the work of all the Anbiya put together. So in that constitution of that mission, I am mentioning to you the Seerat of my grandfather. What is the message in it for us? This is where we have to just look into and understand. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. What Imam Hussein wanted to tell us is the fact that there are places and situations in the seerat of the Prophet and in the seerat of Imam Ali. There are places and situations in the seerat of the Prophet and in the seerat of Imam Ali that the people did not have the ability to tolerate. They did not have the ability to stomach, to digest. There are things in the life of the Prophet that no one had the ability to digest. They could not tolerate the Prophet doing this. They could not stomach Imam Ali acting this way. They couldn't handle it. And they want us to look at those situations, look at those places. And they said, Imam Hussein is trying to say that, look at my own self. I mean, I have done something that not only were the people not able to tolerate it, but they all gathered to kill me for it. They've all gathered to kill me for it. Imagine what sort of reaction is this to what Imam Hussein has done. Can you imagine that? So now, Imam Hussein, you're trying to tell us regarding this, what should we do? He said, now you should now scrutinize and investigate those places where people could not tell, even the closest companions of the Imams could not digest what the Imams were doing. Imam Ali's treaty with Muawiyah, Malik Ashtar could not digest it. He complained to Imam Ali, why are you doing this? Could not handle it. And Imam is saying, scrutinize those places, learn those places, and see why they were not able to digest that. All the places, whether it is the good things that the Prophet did or the hard and strict things that the Prophet and Imam Ali did. Look at all those places. In the examples of good, yes, you know, I mean, you'll say that, you know, okay, if it's good, everyone wants good. Everyone likes good. Even the bad people like good. A thief wants a wife who's not a thief. A criminal wants workers that are not criminal. A troublemaker wants children that are not troublemaker. Right? I mean, obviously, even the bad people want good. So wanting good is not something strange. Wanting good is not something strange, but what kind of goodness did the Prophet practice? What kind of goodness did Imam Ali practice that the people could not understand it? Could not tolerate it. This is what we want to understand, my friends. These are the places we want to understand. And inshallah, I will mention those places in these days that we are here. What are those places that are difficult to understand in their life? Because there are places people could not understand. Why did you do this? How can you act like this? What you're doing doesn't make sense to me. Many places like that, and we want to understand those places, inshallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Here, we see that some of the seerat that we look at in the Prophet and the Imams, we see really it is one, unbearable, two, very difficult to practice. Or even go along with. Very difficult to practice or even go along with. So what is it when we look at that? Here, I just want to say this so that you understand it for yourself. As a question. You know, it is possible. And I want you to imagine this. It is possible that if Imam Hussein was surrounded today by people who want to kill him, and his family was surrounded today in our time with people who want to kill him, I would say that it is possible, inshallah, you know, that we can think about ourselves as such, that we would be people who would go to his aid, who would go to defend him. I mean, all of these majalis, you know, should have done some work on us. Right? That if Imam Hussein is surrounded today by these armies, inshallah, we can assume that we are, inshallah, that good, that we can go and defend his family, we can go and defend him, and that we can go and give our lives for him, right? At least, you know, we can have this thought. Inshallah, the media has not fooled us. You know, because the media does fool you. There are many Muslims who really don't know, who's responsible for the strife in Palestine. Is it the Palestinians or is it Israel? Yeah. Oh, they kill innocent Israelis too. Where did you hear that? All over the place. Look at the news. So obviously they're fooled. So if a person is fooled like this, there's no way he can go to Imam Hussein. You know, there's no way he will be able to understand what's going on if he's fooled so easily. Right? Many people were fooled by Muawiyah and Yazid and their media. Easily they were fooled. So inshallah we will not be fooled. Right? Let's say we have learned our lesson and we have learned from the lesson of Karbala, we will not be fooled. And inshallah, we don't have that much attachment to our dunya. We don't have that much attachment to our American dream that, you know, we will say that, you know what, I won't leave this for anything. Inshallah, we're not blinded by it. Right? And we will be able to leave it. Right? Let's say Imam Hussein is right now in trouble and we have to go, would we do this? And inshallah, you know, we give ourselves that benefit of doubt, right? Hopefully we are that good. Are we? We all can, inshallah, do some self-reflection in these type of situations. But, my friends, I want you to imagine this. If you think this is difficult, if you think what I'm saying is difficult, right, that you're ready to leave all of this, to sacrifice all of what you have in order to defend the life and the family of Imam Hussein. If you think that's difficult, in fact, I would say it's not that difficult. We should have been that good. We should be that good that we can go and defend him. But you know what is difficult? You know what is highly unlikely of us in our situation that, you know, I see? What is really difficult is to practice the seerat of the Prophet and Imam Ali. This is more difficult. This is more difficult than going and fighting against Batil and trying to defend Imam Hussein and his family and sacrificing our life. This is more difficult to practice the seerat of the Prophet. This is highly unlikely that we would be able to do this. You understand what I'm saying now? This is very highly unlikely that I see that, you know, we can do something like that. My friends, when Imam Hussein is speaking about the seerat of the Prophet, he's not speaking out of anguish or out of, for example, sadness that the people don't know this. He's speaking because he wants to give us a message and saying that there's a lesson that you need to learn from this. The people in my time did not understand this. The people in my father's time did not understand this. The people in my grandfather's time did not understand this. But I'm giving this message to you so that you can learn this part of the seerat so my son, Mahdi, Imam Mahdi, would not have that trouble.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
In other words, we all had this trouble. We all had this problem. We all had the problem that people did not understood the seerat of the Prophet or Imam Ali. That's why they could not go with us all the way. That's why they fell short. That's why they weren't able to understand what we were doing. So I want to point this out to you so at least you can learn. You can be of those people that learn, and then when the final rising will happen, that you will not have this problem. You will not have this problem. So what is the lesson for us? What have we done? Right? Have we done something wrong? Because it's as if, you know, for example, we did not respect the seerah of the Prophet. No, you haven't done anything wrong. Right? Have we disrespected the seerat of the Prophet? No, we haven't. In what way are we unable to bear the seerat of the Prophet? In what way, my friends? It doesn't have to be bad. We don't have to be bad not to understand it. See, that's one thing. I want you to understand this. You don't have to be bad not to go along with Imam Hussein. You don't have to be bad not to understand or able to bear the practice of Imam Ali. You don't have to be bad for that. Allah gives an example in the Quran. He says, listen, not understanding, not being able to tolerate, not being able to digest what someone is doing who has an awareness above than you is not something bad. Look at the example of Khidr and Musa. Khidr is doing things that Musa cannot tolerate. Musa cannot digest. And Musa is not bad for that. Musa is unable to digest what Khidr is doing. And Allah gives that example and says, listen, it doesn't mean that you are bad. It doesn't mean that you are wrong. It just means that you have a little bit further to go in your ma'rifats. That's what it means. A little bit further. Just a little bit further. Work harder and understand this. The conclusion is, loving Imam Hussein is not enough. Knowing Imam Hussein is not enough. If that wasn't enough, right? Fighting against the Yazid is not enough. Giving your life in the defense of Imam Hussein is not enough. Understanding the movement of Imam Hussein is not enough. If this was the only thing that we have to do to understand Zulm and to fight against it, this is not enough. The idea behind this is that you are my Shias. Imam Hussein is saying, you are my Shias. You are those people who know me, my father, my grandfather. You are those who love me, my father, my grandfather. For you, it is not enough for you to just know me and fight for me. For you, it's not enough just to go into battle with me. For you, what is important is to practice the seerat of my father and grandfather. This is what's important. This is what's necessary. Yes, and don't take the easy side of the seerat. Right? Some people take the easy side of the seerat. Oh, Imam, Rasulullah read this dua on this day. So we all read the dua, we're doing the seerat of the Prophet. You shouldn't just take the inner side. Let the others take that. The easy side of the seerat. You are the inner circle. You are the inner circle. You are the core. There is more expected of you. Don't just take the easy side. Oh, this is what Rasulullah did. No, take something that's harder than that. We look for situations and places where it's hard to practice. And try to do that. Try to practice that. That is what we want to do. Unbearable. You know, when we say it's unbearable to the Prophet, unbearable means that it becomes unbearable for you to live with those people who practice the seerat of the Prophet. You see that those who practice the seerat of the Prophet, we see people cannot live with them. I can't tolerate him. He's doing this. This is seerat sunnat of the Prophet. But I can't live with that. So you can't even tolerate people who practice the seerat of the Prophet. How can you tolerate the Prophet himself? Understand this. This is where we are. What is there for us here in this? My friends, what is there for us in this? If we just have to go in a war and fight, if we just had to go in a jihad, right? That there's a war, Imam Hussein is out there and we have to go and fight, we would go and then fight there. And it would be easy to do that. Very probable to do that. But what's difficult is that Imam Hussein threw a wrench in the middle. Imam Hussein put a stipulation there. Hussein, if it was only jihad we had to do and come forward, we would do that. We'll take our swords, our guns, whatever we can. And if you call us, we'll go there. If your life is in danger, we'll come and defend it. But the problem is, Imam Hussein put the problem in the middle. He says, no, that's not enough. That's not enough. I'm putting a restriction now. What is that restriction? The restriction is that with all of these things, in defending me, my family, in giving your life, and all of these things, you have to practice the seerat of my father and my grandfather. You have to do this also. Imam Hussein, as if this wasn't difficult for us, now you're asking us to do this also at the same time to make sure that we are aware of the seerat of the Prophet and do that also at the same time. He says, yes, do that also at the same time. That is what's necessary. That is what's necessary. My friends, if we can solve the riddles of Karbala, if we can uncover the secrets of Karbala, all of them, and understand them, and make our heart illuminated by them, I promise to you that you will be raised with the shuhada of Karbala. Allah is not bakhil. Allah is not stingy. Why won't He raise you there? Because you have the same marifat that they have. These are the secrets we want to uncover from Karbala, to see that how can we be amongst those shuhada? How can I be raised amongst the shuhada? He says, yes, you can be. Gain all the secrets that they had, and that's when you'll get there. Subhanallah. Now, you won't be like them, that's different. You cannot be like them. Right? Maybe some people think that, oh, you know, we can become like the people of Karbala. No, you cannot become like the people of Karbala. That should be very clear to us. Right? You can't become like the people of Karbala, but you can be raised with them. That's different. Why can't we become like them? It says because, listen, the companions of Imam Hussein in Karbala, when they reached Imam Hussein, they didn't have anyone to learn from. They came themselves. You have the companions of Imam Hussein to learn from. You learn from them. They were original. You are copies. They are original, you are copies. Right? You have to copy them, you learn from them, and you go there. They are original. They reach there, and that's why our salam is on them. That you came to Imam Hussein, in spite of that, there being no examples before you. This is your greatness. Yes, this is your greatness. Why this seerat? Just let me answer one more question, and inshallah, we'll go on from here. Why this seerat, my friends? And I want you really to understand this, and emphasize this in your life. The seerat. That why I need to practice this seerat. Why this seerat? Why learn this seerat? It's because that's where, my friends, that's where the nuances, the subtleties of the knowledge of Ahlul Bayt are known. As an introduction, let me explain to you this way. We have different things. We have war, we have peace. We have harshness, we have forgiveness. We have appreciation. We have, for example, admonition, right? We have, for example, advice. We have criticism. Right? We have all of these things. The issue is, where do you use these things? In the application of these things, where do you apply these things? How do you apply them? In what way? That's where all the mistakes are made. That's where all the problems come in. How do you apply these things? Let me give you an example. Very simple example. A father came to me and said, "You know, my son, I have lost him." Not lost in the sense he's lost, but since he doesn't listen. He really lost, huh? He doesn't listen. He doesn't do anything that I say. He's not good in his studies. He's just bad, you know. He doesn't listen. So I said, "Yeah, did you try to, encourage him and appreciate him?" He said, "Yes, I tried that a lot. Didn't work." I said, "All right. Did you try to admonish him? Right? You know, be hard on him." He said, "I tried that also. It didn't work." He says, "Well, did you try to advise him and counsel him?" He says, "Well, I tried that. It didn't work also." And he tried to talk to him, explain to him things. He said, "I tried that also and that didn't work." What kind of a child is this? I mean, is he retarded or is he okay? I mean, what's the issue with this child? I mean, you look like a normal person. Child looks like a normal person. Then why is he not listening? Why is he not becoming better? You see, he has tried all the right things. But now what happens? Now you have to go in detail. I said, "Okay, you know, you tried admonishing, you tried encouragement, you tried advice, you tried talking. Let's see how you did this." You see, now you have to go in detail. I mean, you tried all this, you know, stuff, and it should be working. Why isn't it working? Let's see how you did it. Let's see your practice. How did you practice this? Tell me, how would you admonish him? How would you encourage him? Where would you do that? In what situation would you do that? When you start to ask him, and I started asking him, that's when I got to know the problem. The problem is not in the admonishment itself, or in the encouragement itself, or in the counseling itself. The problem was in where was this counseling done? How was it done? How was his advice given? Then I understood that, you know what? When he used to punish him, he used to punish him because he himself was angry. You see, he came back from a bad day at work. He was angry. And so what happened? He saw that, you know, my son's report card is here. The marks are low. So now he's already angry. So he took out his anger on his son. So the son who's getting beaten up, who's getting disciplined, he is understanding that this beating is not because of my fault. This beating is because my dad is angry and I just found myself in a bad situation. Right? That's why he's not improving. That's why he's not growing. If he had, you know, if you had punished him in the right way, disciplined him in the right way for what he did wrong, then he would understand that this is because of what I did. And it would affect him. But no, you got angry at him because you were angry. And so you see the wrong effect at that. Now when do you encourage him? When do you appreciate him? You see an example of that. Is that, for example, they were having a wedding in their house and everyone was happy and jolly and having a good time. And he broke the silverware. When he broke the silverware, he did something wrong. So because you were happy, you said, it's all right, don't worry about it. Go on, play. So he understood that, okay, I made a mistake, but you know what? I made a mistake when my dad was happy. That's why he didn't say anything to me. I felt, understand this. This is the wrong way of doing it. The idea is that you did the right things, but you did them at the wrong times, in the wrong way. That's why all of these methods are right. But because you used them in the wrong way, you practiced them in the wrong place, that's why they did not work. That's why they did not work. That's why you see, knowing values and knowing morals is not enough. What is necessary is to know where those morals have to be used and where those values have to be placed. That's what's necessary in life. Just knowing it is not enough. Let me give you another example that's a little bit easier. I understand this. There's a hadith that we have. Hadith that we have, Al-Mu'min bushrahu fi wajhihi. The mu'min, the believer, his smile is on his face. His smile is on his face, meaning that he's always happy. His happiness is on his face. You can see him, he's happy. Right? A mu'min is always happy. So now what happens is that when a mu'min is happy, so now when he goes around, where should he use this smiling face? Where should he show his smile? So we ask someone, for example, you ask someone, where did you show your smile? Say, well, I show my smile. Where do you show it? You know, I remember that when I went, you know, to this wealthy guy for a loan, I was smiling all the time. So when you went to the banker to get the loan, you were smiling. I said, don't you know that this is a wrong place to smile? This is the wrong place to smile. We have a hadith from Rasulullah that says, if you smile in front of a wealthy person because of his wealth, then Allah will send lanat on you and make you poor. He will make you poor. He will make you go through poverty. Because of this attitude, understand this. So you did the right thing in the wrong place. It is useless. It is useless. Knowing the faza'il, knowing that something is great, this and that, this is not enough. Knowing where it should be applied, that's what's necessary, my friends. That's what's necessary. How do you apply these things? Where do you apply these things? That's what's necessary for us to understand. This is why we learn the seerat. We want to know the seerat. Imam Hussain is saying, learn the seerat of my grandfather and father. For what? So that you can understand that the knowledge that we are giving you, how should you use it in your life? Where should be applied in your life? This is why you should know the seerat. This is why you should know why, when and how and where the Prophet did this and Imam Ali did this. Then you will understand it better. Those people who don't understand it, they couldn't understand it. Really, they couldn't understand it. I'll give the examples tomorrow. But if you really understand it, you know, imams are looking for people who can understand this. really. They're looking for people who can understand this. Because usually what happens is this, that when a person doesn't understand the Imam, what happens is the Imam is standing up, he sees his own people looking at him and saying, "What are you doing?" That's what happened. When Muawiyah raised, when he raised the Quran on the spears, everyone was arguing with Imam Ali. "Oh, he raised the Quran, he brought the Quran as a mediation between us and them. We have to stop fighting." Imam Ali said, "No, go ahead, fight." And they're looking at him as if he lost his religion. That's his, you know. He says, "What? Fight with the Quran? No way." Imam Ali is trying to say, "Listen, I'm the Quran, don't worry." He said, "You are the Quran, astaghfirullah." Now, for Imam Ali to have such people around him, imagine this, they can't understand him. How hard is it for Imam to do anything in this situation where people don't understand him? When he's doing it. Yes, the easy things, it's very easy to understand. The easy things they do, it's very easy to understand. It's those difficult positions that's hard to understand. Imam Ali doing that. Now, when the same people who stood up and asked him to stop fighting, when now Imam Ali wants to make a treaty with Muawiyah, now they stand up against him. "How dare you make treaty with Muawiyah? You have sold yourself. You have sold yourself, and that says, you know, we don't believe in you." Same people. Now they stand up against him. So now, when you have people like that, imagine the heartache that a person has to go through if he's a leader like that. He can't do anything. He can't really reach for the truth. The truth is far away. You want to reach for the truth and get that nucleus, that core of the truth out. And you need people who can go along with you. You need people who can go along with you. When you don't have people who can go along with you, the Imams, their hands are handcuffed. They are handcuffed, they can't do anything. They need people like that. That's why these teachings are there, so that we as his Shias can have that much ma'rifat in us. That no matter what the Imam does, we understand, yes, we know what you're doing. And we are with you, 100%. We are with you. This is the type of a Shia that they want. That's why these lessons are there. They gave these lessons to us and they pointed out these lessons to us. Do you understand that? How far can you go with the Imam? How much can you go with the Imam? And the further you go, the higher in rank you become in the eyes of Allah. You know, who can go that far with the Imam? Who can have that much ma'rifat? Who would understand him all the way? You know, there has to be someone. If Imam is going that far, there must be someone who understood that. The reason why, for example, Imam Hassan didn't go that far as Imam Hussein did, or Imam Ali did not go that far as Imam Hussein did. Why? Because Imam Ali didn't have those people who would understand what he would do. Imam Hassan did have those people who would understand what he would do. But Imam Hussein had such people. You know, people who understood what he was doing. A person who understood, you know, you see the examples in Karbala. Who understood Imam Hussein the most? You know why? The one who understood Imam Hussein the most was the flag bearer of Imam Hussein, Abul Fadl Abbas. Why is Abbas so high in rank? Why is Abbas so high in rank? You know, because he understood Imam Hussein more than others. He could go along with Imam Hussein more than others. And that's why to have someone like Abbas on your side, Imam Hussein knows that I can go as far as I want and I will have Abbas with me. Others might lose their trust, others might have doubts, but Abbas will not have doubts. When Imam speaks, he doesn't speak through emotion. We shouldn't listen to his speeches just by emotion and say, "Oh, this is an emotional speech Imam is giving. And he's saying these type of things." When he said that my back is broken at the death of Abbas, that when Abbas passed away, that my back is broken. Imagine that. This, he is really meaning it. that this has happened. This is my friends. How far you can go. This is my friends. This is how far it goes. You know, Zainab understood Imam Hussein. No matter anyone would go away, you see that Zainab was there. Zainab was there for Imam Hussein. She was there all the way with Imam Hussein. And you know what? It is, I don't know, coincidence or by design, that you see, the ones who were the closest to Imam Hussein, you can say, you know, have been buried the farthest from Imam Hussein. Really, if you go there, you will see this, you know. That, for example, when you go to Karbala, and inshallah, may Allah give you the tawfiq to go to Karbala. Our dream should be to reach Karbala. You know, and when you go to Karbala, obviously, just being on that land and being in that place where Imam Hussein and Abbas and Ahlul Bayt encamped and they used to live. This is the place that when you go there itself humbles you. But then when you go to Karbala, you will see that the grave that is the furthest from Imam Hussein is the grave of Abbas. It is the furthest from him. And everyone who goes there, when they see that, they say that, you know, you should go to Abbas first. You should go to Abbas first and get the permission from him to go to Imam Hussein. Abbas, Ya Abul Fazl. You know, we are told to ask you the permission to go to Imam Hussein. We aren't able to reach Imam Hussein. Abbas, we ask you, take our hands and help us reach there. Take my hand. Ask with humility. Don't ask with pomp and arrogance. Ask with humility, take me there. Take me to Hussein. My friends, Imam Hussein is waiting for people who would understand him, who would know how far he goes and they would understand him. That's why when Imam Hussein saw that, you know, he needs those type of people. And those are the people who would convey his mission and message to the people. The whole of the camp of Imam Hussein was silent, was in a state of melancholy, in a state of sadness and grief when they came to Karbala. Karbala was a very heavy for them. Zainab, when she was young and she used to see her mother work in the house, and as Fatima used to work in the house and do things in the house, when she used to be stitching clothes in the house, and she would cry. She would cry at that moment, and Zainab, as a young daughter, would ask, "Mother, why are you crying?" And she would say that, "I'm just crying for what I see on this shirt that I'm sewing. I'm crying for what I see on the shirt that I'm sewing. I see the blood of your brother in the shirt and my family." Zainab knew what was going to happen in Karbala. That's why Zainab, when she came there, you know that Zainab's heart was heavy and Zainab was sad. But the rest of Ahlul Bayt, they might not have all the information that Zainab had. But you see, Zainab was special to Ahlul Bayt, the whole of Ahlul Bayt. Imam Hussein was their imam outside, but Zainab was their light inside the household. Everyone will look at Zainab and everyone will look at her and say that Zainab, Whatever she felt, everyone else felt. Whatever she went through, everyone else would go through. Zainab was the torch in the household of Ahlul Bayt. All the children would look up to her. All the men would look up to her, that this is Zainab. She was the nucleus of Ahlul Bayt, like Fatima was the nucleus in the household of the Prophet. She was the nucleus in Imam Hussein's household. So now when she came to Karbala and they saw sadness in her eyes, everyone else became sad also. Everyone fell into grief also. Everyone else did that also. Because it was natural for them. They looked at Zainab and they said, if she doesn't smile, we will not smile. If she doesn't become happy, we won't become happy, because she knows something we don't know. She knows a reality that we are unaware of, but we know and we trust Zainab, that Zainab, whatever she says is right. If she's my aunt, it doesn't matter. If she's my mother, it doesn't matter. If she's my sister, it doesn't matter. Zainab is the torch of Ahlul Bayt. That's why when Imam Hussein arrived in Karbala, Zainab was sad. The rest of the camp was sad. Everyone was sad. But you know what? There was one time when that sadness went away. That one time that sadness. Who, if someone could make this sadness go away from Zainab, imagine what sort of a person that is. Imagine what his stature is. Imagine what his status is. Imagine what kind of a being he is, that he can make that. He can make Zainab smile again. He can make her overcome what's going to come on Ashura and have that moment of happiness again. And that's where you see, my friends, this is where you see those people and those Shias who know Imam Hussein and who know Imamat and who know the secrets of Imamat. They are so welcomed by Ahlul Bayt that they look for such people. I said, one of the graves, when you go to Karbala, that is away from Imam Hussein, and it's singular. They're all the shuhada are put together in one grave, but the grave of Habib ibn Mazahir is different. The grave of Habib ibn Mazahir is different. When you go there, you will see, this is Habib, you are put in a different place than the shuhada. There's a reason, my friend, Habib ibn Mazahir, the friend of Imam Hussein, a young friend, from his childhood friend. Imam Hussein and Habib, in age-wise, they had 13 years difference. Habib was 13 years older than Imam Hussein. He was 13 years older than Imam Hussein. And when his family moved to Medina from Yemen, when they moved there, you see that he was close to Imam Hussein, very close. Imam Hussein was a young baby then. But he was very close to Imam Hussein. In fact, he would be, whenever he saw Imam Hussein, he would go behind him. And he would always try to make him happy, make him smile. His father, Mazahir, one time was walking with the Prophet, and then all of a sudden Rasulullah stopped, turned around, and he took Habib in his hands and he kissed him in the head and he hugged him. Mazahir said, what did my son do to deserve this? He says, you did not see what I saw. I saw him, that he was walking behind Hussein. He has so much respect for my son, for my grandson Hussein. He was walking behind Hussein. And as my son, he was three, Imam Hussein is 3 years old. As Hussein was walking, he was walking behind him. And every place Imam Hussein would put his feet, he would take the dirt from that place and he would put it on his face. Someone who goes that far to know and to please their Imam and to be with their Imam and to receive from the Imam, now understand how close they are to the Imam. Habib was in Kufa. Imam Hussein wrote a letter to Habib and he said that this is from Hussein ibn Ali to ila rajulin faqih, the person who's a faqih, who is knowledgeable, who's an alim. Imam Hussein called him an alim. He says, you have knowledge, Habib. I wouldn't have written this letter to you if the daughters of Rasulullah were not with me. Habib, I just have to tell you that the daughters of Rasulullah are in danger and they're surrounded by enemies. So I'm asking you if you can come and help them. If you can come and help them, Habib. Habib, when he received the letter and someone who delivered it, he went to the door to receive it. He received the letter, read it. He cried. His wife was inside. He cried over it. He wiped his tears. He wiped his tears and he came to his wife. His wife, looking at him, seeing his eyes and seeing his face, says, "What's the matter? Who's the letter from?" Habib nonchalantly said, "Oh, this is from Hussein ibn Ali." "From Hussein ibn Ali?" He says, "Then, what's he saying?" He said that he's saying that he's in danger, that the daughters of Rasulullah are in danger. And again, he came to the table and sat down, and the wife looked at him and says, "What are you going to do about this, Habib?" He says, "What are you going to do about this?" He said, I'm thinking what to do." He said, "Are you going to help him?" "I'm thinking." "Are you not going to help him?" "I'm thinking." "Habib, what's the matter with you? If you don't want to pick up the sword, let me pick your sword. I will go and defend Hussein. Maybe you should sit in the house. Maybe you should do the housework. I will go there." Habib started crying. He said, "Times are bad. I needed to see where you stand on this issue before I take a stand." Habib said, "How can I not go for my friend Hussein? Hussein is in danger and Habib is going to sit here. No, this will not happen." Habib is going to go there. He came to his servant and said, get my horse ready. He came to his slave, said, "Get my horse ready." And the slave got his horse ready. He got up on the horse. The slave looked up at him. His eyes are looking into his eyes. Habib says, "What's the matter?" He says, "Nothing. I'm just your slave. I'm just your slave. I don't have an opinion." He says, "Okay, then I free you. Go ahead, you're freed. You can go your way. Habib doesn't need you anymore." And then when Habib started riding, the slave started coming behind him. Habib said, "I freed you." He said, "Habib, master, you have taught me well. I've been freed from you. I'm not your slave anymore. Now I'm a free man. I want to be the slave of Hussein." Habib went forward, made his way to Karbala. And when he came to Karbala, as I said, the whole camp was in a mourning, as if in a state of mourning. They were sad. No one was smiling. From the 2nd of Muharram to the 6th of Muharram, no one smiled. No one was doing anything. They were just living. They were just looking. Because every time an army would come, every time people would come, they would go on the side of Yazid and they would make his ranks bigger. And to the extent that Zainab asked Imam Hussein, "Brother, all these people are coming. They are coming to help Yazid. Isn't there anyone who's going to come to her help? Isn't there anyone who would come for your help? No one is there to come for your help?" Then Imam said, "Yes, someone is going to come. Someone is going to come." And when they saw Habib coming, they saw the dirt rise. People said, oh, saying someone is coming our way. Someone is coming our way. And when Habib came closer, then you see that everyone, when they heard, when they saw Habib ibn Mazahir is here, they all in a jubilant ecstasy started jumping up and down and said, Habib ibn Mazahir is here. Habib ibn Mazahir is here. Do you see the worth and value of Habib? It's not because he's a strong soldier. He's 75 years old. He cannot even stand straight. He needs to tie his belt tight in order to stand straight. But you see, the value of a soldier is not in his strength of arms, but the value of a soldier is in his ma'rifat for Hussein. When Habib came in, all these men came around Habib and they were picking him up and said, Habib is here, Maraba, Habib is here. As if an army has come to them, as if a nation has come to their aid, and everyone came together. And when this shouting, and when this ecstasy, the sounds were heard inside the tents, Zainab asked Fizza, what's going on outside? Why are these people laughing in this situation? Why are they all happy? Fizza went outside and brought the news that Habib ibn Mazahir is here. When Zainab heard that, she began to smile. She began to smile. And said to Fizza, give my salam to Habib. My friends, you know, no, I want you to see the weight of this statement. Feel it in your heart. Feel it in your heart, the weight of this statement. Imagine if you are living in Medina and Fatima is alive and her house is there. How would you treat her? Would she be your queen? That she is the queen of Medina. Whatever she says goes. You would be at her door to say, tell me what to do, I will do for you. Imagine if a time comes when Fatima says, I'm sending my salam to you. How would you feel? How would you feel that, why did you send this? I'm your servant. I'm your servant. Oh, Zainab, what situation she came in. Maybe she remembered Fatima, that Fatima used to say salam in Medina and no one would answer her salam. No one would answer her salam. Maybe Zainab remembered that and said, let me send my salam to Habib. When Fizza came and told Habib, Habib, the daughter of Fatima is sending salam to you. Habib took out his amama, threw it on the ground. He wrapped himself on the ground, picked up the dirt of Karbala, threw it on his head and said, what a time has come on Ahlul Bayt that they're sending salam to slaves like us. سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلب. مات حسين.
Yo Sain, 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 Yo Sain,